Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4, packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
All right, guys, it's Jim Costa from Cash the Ticket. And if you're betting college football bowl games, and that can be a dicey endeavor, we're the podcast for you. We're releasing breakdowns for every matchup with new episodes dropping almost every day. Subscribe to Cash the Ticket on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm blessed, man. I can't complain, man. I feel good. You know, the Cavs is off and running. Bro, listen, this regular season is different for the Cavs because we got a new head coach. We got a new style of offense that we are putting into place. And so I think the fans are going to be watching more intensely than they normally would in the last couple of years under J.B. Bickerstaff during the regular season as the Cavs learn this offense. I think there's so much that you can, you know, point to. But for you, through just the two games so far, what has been the one thing that has stood out to you above everything else?
It felt like they have been wanting to play with pace, right? That's what they've mentioned all off season. But that has been something that they talked about, playing at three different speeds, not just going run and gun the entire game and getting past everybody. It's being able to play at multiple speeds, slowing the game down when needed, and being able to get buckets in the half court as well. And I feel like they've been able to execute that at a high clip to start the season. Not only have them been able to get go-ahead passes and pass-ups to get open looks in transition, but they have been able to execute their schemes and their sets in the half court. Then you also get when they're in late into the shot clock and trying to figure out where they want to go with the ball and being able to get their ball into the guy's hands that they know can get a bucket at any time. It feels like they have been very confident in this new offensive set to be able to have offensive freedom. And for me, that's where it is when it comes to the biggest impact of this new offense, because everybody looks comfortable. Nobody looks rattled. Nobody looks rusty. It's let's get this done and let's get started on the right foot. That's why they're 2-0, more than likely going to be 3-0 after this Wizards game tonight.
You know, Ethan, you talk about the pace of play. Darius Garland last night, I think he spoke to, you know, just the amount of cuts that they're making and, you know, a lot of switches and things like that. You see a lot of movement when players are off the ball. You just see a lot of that. You know, so far, and again, it's been two games, and I know they've been through training camp in the preseason, but you look at Kenny Atkinson and his staff, and it just seems like, you know, the attention to the detail and the techniques of the things that they are teaching is really, really unlocking the guys that was already here last year. You know, you talk about the confidence level. You know, we've seen game one, first basket goes to Evan Mobley, right? We knew last season, the big talking point, Evan Mobley needs to be unlocked. We need to get Evan more involved. Last night, first basket, Darius Garland. We already know the type of year he had last year. Clearly, Darius Garland is another guy that you need to get revved up and get going. Speak a little bit to Darius Garland and, you know, the first game in particular. What I appreciated is even though the shots didn't fall, he kept taking them. And it's not like they were not shots in rhythm or within what was going on. Like, do you see Darius kind of, you know, climbing up out of that hole, so to speak, for lack of a better word, that he was in last season?
Yeah, 100%. Darius is a guy that is resilient, right? He had one of the worst years of his career, one of the worst years of his life when it came to dealing with injuries last year. His grandmother also passed away. Now he's back rejuvenated and trying to get back on the horse. Obviously, the first game of the season didn't really go his way, but not to say that, right, you're absolutely right, Earl. He went and continued taking shots. But he also was able to facilitate, right? He's a guy that can open up passing lanes on a dime. In the game against the Pistons, right, he had 6 assists. He also had 3 threes early on. So that not only creates offense for others, but it also makes the team and the opposing defense have to look at him and be aware of where he is on the court at all times. Darius is somebody that, even when his game is not going, is still dangerous to opposing defenses because of what he can create for everybody and for himself. He was also getting to the basket as well. Earl, I don't know if the Cavs fans noticed this, but last year he was going away from the basket when it came to after injuring his face. Obviously, if I broke my face, I'd be doing the same thing. This year, it feels like he's back and trying to get active into the painted area, at the rim, all these different things. He took four more shots in the field goal range when it was also in the three-point range. He had 3 of 7, right? This is a guy who is trying to have a comeback year, might try and go for the most improved this season.
Yeah, I'll tell you this, and this ain't no fancy analyst right here, but, man, them assists he been having been looking pretty. Like, they look pretty, like, and Darius the scorer, yeah, we're going to need that, man. But I see growth as Darius the facilitator. Like, I really see a different dude this year. Speaking of facilitators, right? So, man, Ethan, Ty Jerome, that's my boy, right? So, last year when the Cavs signed Ty Jerome, I thought that, you know, he was going to be a quote-unquote X-factor. A guy that you can look at him like, okay, he's going to be one of those important role players for the Cavs. Unfortunately, we didn't see that. But through two games, man, you can already see the impact that he can have. He's a point guard that can score. He has some size. He allows you to play three guard sets with both Darius and Donovan off ball if you want to. Like, speak to the importance of Ty Jerome and how having him healthy, and if he can stay healthy, what type of impact that I have on this Cavaliers team.
I mean, he's the backup point guard if the Cavs want to go that route, right? Because you have Darius and Donovan obviously running the show, Donovan being the de facto point guard. But with Ty Jerome on the floor, Donovan can also take a back seat because Ty Jerome is a pass-first point guard. Darius Garland is a score-first and then pass-first, right? He gets it in both areas. Ty Jerome is known as a pass-first point guard. And also, when you just look at the stats of how Ty Jerome has impacted, right? Ty Jerome has the highest offensive rating already for the Cavs through two games. Obviously, a small sample size, but 134.2 is outrageous for when the Cavs are playing with him on the court. And he also has a net rating of 36.9. So this cat is getting after it. He's hungry, one, because he's coming back from an ankle injury. Kenny Atkinson also talked a little bit about how him understanding that his body is his temple, his body is something that he takes care of now better than he did before the injury. Now he's cherishing the moment. He's getting after it. I mean, last night he was the X factor. You talk about coming into the game, dropping off 13 points off the bench, 4 assists, and being able to just solely run the offense with no problem. It was something that I think he's going to be able to do for the rest of the season if he can stay healthy.
Yeah, and, you know, I didn't think about this, and it's funny how things play itself out, but, you know, I became a big fan of the signing when Kobe Altman brought him aboard last year, because I remember when Golden State came here a couple years ago, I think Steph Curry was hurt. I think he's dropped like 20, 22 points on the Cavs. And, you know, that raised my eyebrows a little bit. But it's funny because here's another guy, along with Jared Allen and Caris LeVert, who is actually very familiar with Kenny Atkinson. And so it kind of does help speed up that process. And I think, you know, it's a benefit to everyone else that's on this roster. You know, Kenny talked about, you know, he's going about 10 deep, you know, a night. And Max Strus right now is injured. It seems like everybody is playing well. I think Isaac Okoro can probably get it going, but for the most part, everybody is playing well. When Strus is healthy, do you think Atkinson just kind of lets this thing play itself out, or do you, because of him being Strus in the contract, do you think he just forced him into the rotation? Like, how would that work if everybody continues to play the way that they're playing so far in this 10-man rotation?
So you're asking the hard questions, right? Because we've seen Kenny Atkinson already play 10 players in a rotation. He's talked about going all the way up to 11 if he needs to, but that's obviously going to be what happens with Strus coming back. Dean Wade is making it hard, right? Dean Wade is making it hard to make that decision, and it's just two games. But Dean Wade having 19 points last night, tying Donovan Mitchell for the team high, also having 5 of 7 from three-point range, something that we weren't appreciating of Dean Wade last year, was how good he was from three-point range. And also, if he's going to up that clip, that's going to bring more volume, and that's going to allow him to have a similar role but better defense than what Max Strus is able to offer, while allowing himself to switch 1 through 5 with the defenders that are on his team, helping Donovan, helping Darius, helping Evan, helping Jarrett. So do I think that Max Strus will come back and still be the small forward? At this point, yes. But if Dean Wade is able to continue this play and is able to keep up the performances that he's been putting on, not only in the box score, but in the plus-minus and in the advanced stats that he's been doing already, it is going to have to come down to the conversation of, is Max Strus better at the 2 for the Cavs than at the 3 with Dean Wade staying in the starting lineup? So, for now, to answer your question, Earl, he'll come back and still be the starting small forward, but the answer is still out on the jury when it comes to what will happen when he comes back in at least 6 weeks, right? That's at least 20 games. This is just when he's going to get reevaluated. It doesn't mean that he's going to come back immediately. I wouldn't be surprised if he's not back for 2 months.
That's a bombshell. So, Ethan, let me ask you this, because you talk about a guy that's playing at 3, probably should be playing at 2. I think he played the 2 in Miami. I would be more comfortable with him playing the 2. So I've been hearing rumblings, right, about Isaac Okoro. We know his build. We know his build, right? We know what we think he should be playing. But I've heard, you know, people who analyze this game better than me say, this man got every attribute of a 4 in Kenny Atkinson's system, even though he has the build of a 2-guard.
It's interesting, right? Because he's a strong 6'5". He's a strong cat. But in Kenny Atkinson's offense, sure, because they play small ball 5 all the time. They have Dean Wade play the 5 at some points, but that was more so in the preseason. In the regular season, more than likely you won't see that lineup too much. But if you have a small ball lineup of Dean Wade and Isaac Okoro and Caris LeVert, along with Darius or Donovan or Donovan and Ty Jerome, I could see Kenny putting that system together. How viable is that against a big lineup for an opposing team? I wouldn't go with it, but I think that Isaac Okoro has shown himself to be strong, right? He's been able to guard Paolo Banchero in the first round of the Orlando Magic series, but we also know that when he's going against taller players than him, sometimes it's not about skill. Sometimes it's not about strength. Sometimes it's about simply, I am taller than you, and I can shoot the ball over you, right? Isaac is one of the best, if not the best, perimeter defender on the Cavs. That is bar none, right? That is not a conversation I'm willing to have. But Isaac is also in a situation where there are multiple players on the team that can do similar things to him on the defensive end, but have a better offensive impact.
Ethan, you look at, you know, the staff that Atkinson has put together, you know, and I'm going to highlight right now Damari Carroll and Johnny Bryant. You know, Damari Carroll, of course, played in this league. He's played against the Cavs in our lifetime, right? We still remember him playing for the Hawks. We was playing with Damari Carroll on video games, it seemed like just yesterday. And we all know the relationship that Johnny Bryant has previously with Donovan Mitchell. You know, speak to, you know, one, Johnny Bryant, and just how much more happier or comfortable is Donovan having that guy right back in the fold? And then what has been his impact along with a former player like Carroll on the rest of the team? And then just a loaded question, and then to wrap it all up, you know, what do you think the positive impacts of how Atkinson has constructed this roster? Like, what are some of the early signs of saying, okay, he did the right thing putting this together this way?
Okay, yeah. I mean, I did a story on Johnny Bryant, a feature story on Johnny talking about how he came all the way up from Oakland, California, and had poor grades and wasn't even planning to go to college and all these other things. And it turned his life around because of the mentorship that he had around him, not only in high school, but also in college when he went to a junior college, then getting the offer to go to Utah, right? Then having these people in his life has shaped the leader that he has become with Donovan Mitchell. Obviously, they have a tight relationship from when he was in Utah, talking about the Jazz now. I feel like it's not a happiness thing for Donovan Mitchell. It's a comfortability of being able to tell you the tough love and the correct things while also understanding that this guy is in your corner and has your back, right? Because when we're at practice, Donovan and Johnny are attached at the hip. Like, there will be three made shots in a row that Donovan will hit on in back-to-back. And then Johnny will pull him to the side and be like, all right, I like that, but I want you to do this better. I want you to do this better. And that's been the same thing when it comes to timeouts, when it comes to in-game adjustments throughout the first two games of the regular season for the Cavs. The communication is key between these guys. Right, Kenny Atkinson and Johnny Bryant are both known for their player development and tapping into the offensive potential of multiple players. D'Angelo Russell comes to mind when you want to make a comparison with how they want to tap into Darius Garland, right? But when you talk about Damari Carroll, it's just a respect thing, right? Having a career like he did, being able to say that you just got out of the NBA, these guys respect that. And they also can compete, right? A lot of these guys are competitors, right? Ty Jerome, George Niang, they're trash talkers. They want to get at you, want to get after it. And playing against in practice, because we know they did a coach's scrimmage as well, like having somebody who just got out of the NBA on the coach's team, that helps with that competition. And we've seen that raise the level of expectation for them as well. When it comes to how Kenny Atkinson has put this roster together, we've talked about the offense a lot tonight, right? In the Pistons win, where they won just 12, it felt like Donovan Mitchell and Darius Garland, the engines of the offense, took a back seat. There were six players on the Cavs that scored in double figures: Dean Wade, Evan Mobley, and quietly, Jared Allen already has a double-double, right? 17 and 11. So this team is quietly being one of the most efficient in the league already, and it's showing that this team can unlock its potential when they're playing together, when they're playing in space, and they're playing in pace, right? This is a team that has a similar offensive rating to the Boston Celtics and the Golden State Warriors, right? The Boston Celtics offensive rating through two games, 130.3. The Cleveland Cavaliers, 124.5. They are right there. And that's against one of the teams, if not the team, that everybody believes will repeat this year, if not just win the Eastern Conference outright.
He is Ethan Sands of Cleveland.com, covers the Cleveland Cavaliers. Ethan, my brother, man, we will be talking a lot during this season. You go ahead, man, and enjoy the rest of your Saturday. Go Cavs as we look to go to 3-0 this season. I'll talk to you soon.
Have a good rest of your day, Earl. Thank you for having me on, brother.
All right, man. Take care. Again, that's Ethan on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline as we get to a 2020 update. Don't forget, Cleveland Cavaliers played their first back-to-back situation today as they take the road to go face the Washington Wizards. Game is at 7 p.m. on the FanDuel Sports Network. When we come back, man, we'll take your phone calls, react to what Ethan had to say. You're listening to Earl of Pearl right here on The Fan.